is Sober Reference. You're listening to A Sober Story, digestible conversations filled with evidence that you can do anything without picking up a drink. We share more cost-free resources on our website, www.soberreference.com, and hope you'll connect with us on social media. Search Sober Reference now and look for our logo. For more information about today's guest, visit our show notes. We hope you find this content valuable and leave feeling inspired to drink less, live more, and meet your potential. Enjoy.
Meg, I am really, really excited to talk to you. I have my notes here because there are things that I wanted to make sure I said. And the first thing I wanted to make sure I said was, I want to thank you. And I want to acknowledge what you've been through.
Thank you.
And I want to acknowledge the freaking dedication it takes to write a book.
It is a beast of a project.
Yeah. You write like I think. And reading your book was so comforting. I feel like I know you. I feel like I'm your friend. And because I'm not, we've just met, I want to be your friend. Like, it's this instant. She gets me. She's safe. She's warm. And it's truly a gift. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for saying that. Your words mean so much to me. I really, when writing the book, just wanted women to feel seen, heard, loved, validated on their journey. And so, you know, I just wanted you to feel like we were on our couch, my couch together, having a cup of coffee and just chatting. That was the goal of the book, was to really just make you feel like you're a friend of mine and come along on my journey and let's explore this, you know, sober, curious journey together.
Yeah, there are so many things about your story that I related to. You know, the very gray area drinking, the way that society and culture sells us that drinking is self-care, our ability to be very high functioning, high performing, while also more secretively and in so many ways in like a very isolating container of self, be suffering and be confused and concerned and scared and not able to trust ourselves. Like, it's such a paradox to be living in this world as a woman who presents as strong and capable and got it all together and taking care of everyone. And then also have this, like, for me, it just like in my body feels like dirty little shameful secret that I'm just not supposed to have. It's like, right, why is this happening? And what your book does so well at doing is really softening those. I'm like getting emotional thinking about it, because it's such, I mean, it's like that little child you talk about, like, the healing takes a long time. And it's such a softening around the idea that like, this is a punishment or that there's something wrong with us because we struggle with substance. And not even in this like crazy, I'm homeless, I lost my job kind of way, but just in this like very personal, intense, scary kind of way.
Well, you really summed it up. You summed the entire book up in such a beautiful way. Thank you.
Yeah, I really resonated with the way that in particular women kind of like twist themselves or like starve or manipulate their bodies or forsake their passions or dull their intellect or drink their mind away, you know, like, and where that kind of came through so powerfully for me in particular was in your relationship with sex and intimacy and how that has really fluctuated throughout your life story. And that has been a journey that I find myself currently on, because things happened to me while I was drinking, things happened to me with my current husband while we were drinking. We had a kind of sex life in that container. Mm-hmm. And then I got sober and we're still figuring it out. Like, it's been years and years and years, and we're still figuring that dance out. And you did mention in the book that like, it was, I think you had said, it's like the longest kind of stretched out aspect of your recovery. So I want to hear from you and share with our listeners a little bit about your personal journey, the before, the during, the after, specifically as it relates to your sex and intimacy and how that was experienced when alcohol was a part of the party and when it was not a part of the party. So can you just start by explaining a little bit about the role alcohol played for you while you were in intimate partnerships or casually dating or whatever, just having sex? while you were still drinking?
Sure. So, you know, you mentioned the inner child, and I got messages very early on in childhood. My parents ran in a country club kind of scene. And so it was very much ingrained into me. This is how you connect with others. My dad would travel all week and he would get off the plane. This is a way to unwind, let off some steam. And it was either they were going to a cocktail party or we were having one at our house. So it was just this constant message of a lot of alcohol was being exchanged on the weekends. And I went into high school just kind of, I wasn't allowed to go to parties. So it was just this occasional social lubricant, really wanting to fit in. Didn't fit in some of my childhood and had some incidences where I talk about in the book, I won't get into it right now, but just basically that I wouldn't amount to much in a story in my book. And so then when in school, I didn't fit in and I was starting to swirl around with not only would I not amount to much, but I would also, you know, like, you don't belong here, you don't fit in. So my first drinking episode basically was in eighth grade. The popular girls, I was at a new school. I invited them over for a sleepover and they asked if they could raid my parents' liquor cabinet, and we did. And I took shots of peach schnapps and had my very first godforsaken awful hangover. And then just really, like I said, in high school, just used alcohol when I could with, you know, socially with friends to fit in. But really was starting to, much like the country club scene, very much concerned on how I appeared outwardly. I really did not have a sense of who I was. And I was getting into some modeling where I was, again, objectifying my body and looking outward for validation on my worth. Unfortunately, in college and post-college, I got into two drinking situations, the one in college at a keg party where I was sexually assaulted, and then one post-college, which was actually a date rape. And those two incidences really then added a level of a story within me that I felt unworthy and not good enough. And because I had no control over my body in those situations, thereafter, I had to control everything. And I went into a over-functioning, you know, I am what I produce. I fell into the whole hustle culture after college. I got into sales. I was only as good as my rankings and I needed to prove my worth. And so I really got caught up in all that. But after college, it was still kind of just a weekend drinking binge situation. And those two situations, you know, I blamed myself. And when you talk about the shame and secrecy, those two sexual assaults, I kept to myself. I felt very shameful about it. I couldn't understand why another human being would do this to another human being. So I blamed myself, which in hindsight, I know it's not my fault, but I blamed myself. And that shame and secrecy really kind of fueled that unworthiness feeling that I, and story I was telling myself, another lie that we tell ourselves that we're not enough by things that happened to us in our childhood or traumas or life situations. And then I got into the beauty sales culture. So I was then falling even more into the way that we appear is really important. And another way of validating, looking like I had it all, the perfectionism. So I was spiraling into this overfunctioning, people-pleasing, and chronic achieving really as a coping skill for all of the things that happened to that little girl as she was growing up. And I go through all those stories in the book. I then met my husband in the industry and we just loved to entertain with alcohol. We were the kind of the people in the neighborhood that had the parties, the ones within the family, everybody came to our house. And alcohol was really at the center of our relationship as a way of connecting. You know, after we have two kids, and you know, after we would put the kids to bed, which would take a long time, we would be exhausted. We would sit down with a bottle of wine and that's how we connected. And that led to many nights of being, you know, inebriated and more willing to have sex. And so it was one of those unspoken things that happened very frequently. And when I ended up becoming sober curious, and he joined me on that journey, I was seeing all these things about when you're sober and you're having sex, it's really great because you're fully present and aware. And that is true. But that was not what I was feeling. I felt like so much transition was happening. I was so early on in my sober cures journey, I was so raw and felt like I had no skin and everything was getting under my skin, including my husband. And I didn't have the substance that I normally had to kind of smooth out those rough edges, right? And so I was trying to figure out what was going on with myself. And I felt very, again, like I was going through this huge transformation. And it was like the wires to that connection of intimacy were corroded. And I was trying to find new plugs of sparks of connecting with him again. We decided at that point to get into some marriage counseling because we were arguing, really, quite frankly, more than we ever had. And the marriage counselor, I was telling her about these intimacy issues that I was having in this early on in my sobriety journey. And she said, "Meg, when you are thinking and contemplating about sex and you're on yellow, I need you to go green." And it was like my inner knowing, my intuition that we all have, you know, as women, popped up and said, you know, is she telling us to be submissive and to abandon ourselves to please again? And I was really in this point in my journey, I was showing up for myself for the first time in my life, asking myself, what are my needs? As a mother, I was, and a career professional, always taking care of everyone's needs in sales, making sure everybody at the office was taken care of, come home, make sure everybody else, you know, at home was being taken care of. And at night, I was falling into a much rewarding, earned, deserved glass of wine, which never really was one.
Well, I want to stop you right there because this is the crux of it for me. First, I relate very much to the glass of wine or two or three really softened my mental anxiety. And also I didn't think I had like reservations around sex or intimacy, but now in sobriety, I mean, I clearly do. So I'm understanding as well that alcohol was sort of a medicine to ease some of the old pain or trauma or uncomfortable gray area abuse experiences that I had in college and before while I was drinking. So all of a sudden sober, I was like, oh, wait, this isn't just super comfortable and like I'm not green,
right? You
know, I'm
right.
Very yellow. Sometimes I am clearly and brightly red.
Correct.
And what you said about the, you know, I've also been given the advice in a different way to just like lean into it. Mm-hmm. And while I want that, and I do believe that is the right advice for someone who doesn't maybe have trauma or something, like it's always felt a little bit like stuck in my heart to take that advice.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're telling me just to bypass.
Right.
My body saying no.
Right.
And it's challenging because I desperately want to go green. I
right.
want to go green
right.
a lot, bright green.
Right.
And my body is like, not yet. There's something here.
Yes.
And so that's the very challenging thing. And, you know, it begs of my husband to be very patient and,
yes,
you know, for us to find our own intimacy in ways while we work through this journey, while I work through this journey and, you know, he supports me on that path. So what you said next in your book was you did a very courageous thing. What you said to your husband about what you needed.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to say that.
Yeah.
I have like 90% said it. Like we've gotten to the point where it's like, if I'm getting the courage to say no each time I mean no,
mm-hmm.
I don't do that all the time because it's still like I'm learning that because I was conditioned to give.
That's right.
I was conditioned that it was just such a like a praise to have a man's attention that like, of course, I'll give it to you. So I want you to talk a little bit about what you asked of your husband, what you explained was going on, and then what happened next. Like, how'd you go from that to perhaps where you are now?
Well, first thing we did was we no longer went to that marriage counselor. It's like, well, that's the last session. You know, I had to choose myself and honor putting myself first before everyone else. And I really love Glennon Doyle's quote where it says, your job and duty and responsibility, I'm kind of summing it up here, is to disappoint everyone around yourself, but, you know, as many times as you need to, but to never disappoint yourself. And that's hard because, just like you said, we are conditioned as women to please other people, make other people feel comfortable, you know, at the sake of our own desires and needs. And so I sat down with my husband and said, I want to tell you, this has nothing to do with you. This has to do with me. I am unbecoming all of these things that I have been, these facades that really alcohol allowed me to kind of, you know, wear a mask and go through life that, you know, and these coping mechanisms of perfection and people pleasing and overfunctioning. I don't want to do it anymore. And so I am having to deep dive into the heart work, the inner work. And it's taking a lot of time and it's a lot of rediscovery of myself. And I need you to be patient with me and know that I love you with all of my heart, but I am not going to go green just because this is what we've done in our marriage for the past decade or so. You know, it's like, I'm sorry, but I am finally going to start putting myself first. And that doesn't mean that this isn't going to happen. This, like you said, was the slowest, and it continues to be. I'm not going to sit here and say like it's all in a perfect shiny box now. It continues to be a way of a reconnection that takes so much time. We had to find new ways of connecting. We started going on bike rides together, walks together. I said to him, you know, I'm exhausted at night, especially early on in the journey. Your body is going through so many transitions and your mind is as well, as you're starting to do the inner work, because sobriety forces you to go inward. And so I said to him, can we start trying to connect earlier in the evenings and maybe go to bed earlier or at other times, you know, because all systems were shutting down for me at 9 p.m. It was like I was just able to get through the day of not choosing to drink, trying to figure out who I was. And it was my emotional bandwidth was tapped out. And it wasn't from him. And I think when we sat down and we talked, and I really confirmed for him, this had nothing to do with my love for him or my attraction to him, but really was just this journey that I was on, that I wanted to reconnect with him in a new way. And it just took time. I mean, all I can say is be gentle with yourself, because it takes time. It's baby steps of finding a new rhythm. It's like a new rhythm of coming together again. And we don't talk about this a lot in the sobriety community. We talk about like sober sex being really good because you're not fogged out and checked out, but we don't talk about this transformative phase where it is really, really difficult physically and mentally to reconnect when you removed a substance that was the connection. It was the thing that brought you together. Maybe was even the way you were a little more, you know, fun. I was afraid I was going to be boring in the bedroom. You know, the whole thing is new. And we have to talk about those early parts, because I know when I was going through it and I couldn't find any podcasts on it or anything on it, I was like, is this just happening to me? Because everyone's saying sober sex is great. You know, so I felt very much alone. And that's why I wanted to write about it. And I've had a couple people say to me, I'm so glad you talk about that, because just like you said, no one's really discussing this part of the journey, the early part, which is really a big transformation.
Yeah. So thank you so much for, you know, pioneering and opening up that container wider for us, because these are the things that you know, you stop drinking and then you know, you really start living and there, you experience the complexities of being a human being. And I, for me, in order to stay stopped, I have to face this stuff because my old ways of being are, you know, to just people please. And like, I just fall back into the people pleaser, the perfectionist. And that version of me like needs a drink, like really, like that version
exhausting.
Of me needs, needs a solution, needs medicine. Cause it is, as you say, exhausting.
Yes.
Yeah. So let's wrap up with, I would love to hear from you what you're excited about what's next. It can be related to intimacy, sex. It can just be related to like anything that you've got going on in your journey. Tell me some things that you just get excited about inside thinking about what you're capable of and what could be next for you.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, the first year for me was like waking up to everything I had been fogged and asleep to for years. And it, the first year was really a lot about alcohol. I'll be honest with you. It was just like, how do I get this out of my life? How do I not depend on this? How do I surf the, you know, the crave? And then the second year was really diving into this heart work, the inner work. And that has been the most beautiful part of the journey. It is where the magic shows up. And I've learned ways as a busy working mom, how do I bring more magic into my day? And what, how do I show up for myself where I can take care of myself so that I can be a better mother, a better wife, a better career professional? And so, when I go on walks, I do this thing and I post it a lot on Facebook. It's called Find the Beauty in the Day. And I get so excited when I go out in nature because I feel like nature is our greatest teacher and it's telling us to slow down to the pace of nature. And when you talked about the people pleaser, the perfectionism, all of these things, just a little sidebar note that I talk about in the book, which is that a snake sheds her skin 12 times a year. And so we have to shed these old coping skills and patterns because they're going to keep popping up. It's like young Pablo says, the deeper the pain, the more letting go that needs to happen. And so, you know, it's, if you can envision a snake shedding her skin and you look at the old outline of that skin, not with judgment or shame or guilt, but that she was doing the best that she could at that time. And now you're growing into a more vibrant, clear, stronger skin. It's not to say that these things are not going to pop up again. They are. They're going to keep popping up. But each time the shedding of the skin becomes easier. And so movement and walking is a way of shedding. It's like a way of processing those emotions. And then I go into this awe and wonder of looking for the beauty in the day, which is really an attitude of gratitude. So for me, it can be, I collect heart rocks because I believe love wins. And, you know, it can be a sunset, a bird, you know, a spirit animal guide or God wink of something that means something to you. But when I find these on my walk, I usually take a picture of it and I just feel so held and loved on this journey by the universe, by God. And I just feel like, okay, I, you know, I'm uncertain about this new part of my journey, but here is the magic and the beauty showing up saying it's going to be okay. You're being held, you're being loved through this. So really it's been now with the book, I've never written a book. I wasn't a journalism major. So I've had to step outside of myself into, well, the people please. I mean, the book forced me to let go of those people pleasing. I had people tell me, you need to take this whole chapter out. I can't believe you wrote about the sex or the sexual assault, like, and I had to be so sure of who I was and what I wanted because I was being challenged every step of the way when I was writing this book. And I realized that it was about helping women and not how many followers and not how many, you know, likes. I didn't have a platform. I'm not a sobriety coach. I just wrote this book because I felt like it was laid upon my heart. And it has taught me to take little baby steps, you know, where it's like, I can't do everything, but do three things a day for the book and rest knowing that that is enough. Because the other thing we fall into is like I still am, like, this is the thing that I'm still working on. Like, I could do more, and I need to do, you know, I need to post more, and I need to do more. And no, it is enough. And I trust that the universe is going to take this book to the women who need to hear this message, and that that is enough. I am enough. And resting in that, every time I like am shaking when I hit post and I don't know how it's going to be accepted, that I am stepping into growth and transformation. And that is where the magic shows up again, because it's like the response that I have gotten is like, it's not the validation that I need, but it's just, I have been so unsure of myself again. It's just like a whole nother journey of doing something I had never done, just like the sobriety journey. But I learned so much in the sobriety journey to just go inward, believe in myself, and listen to my inner knowing. And so that is where I just am like, I want to help women slow down, because we're all so busy. This hustle culture has always telling us we're not good enough. We need to fix ourselves, improve ourselves, especially during dry January. You know, it's like that message is coming through loud and clear. Now, there's nothing to fix. There's nothing to improve. You are good enough. Rest in those little baby steps of taking little actions towards the change and transformation, and knowing you have done enough, you are enough. And so that's where I just want to, you know, I really actually want to create a writing community down the road where I can help women step into the truth of who they are and really reconnect with this inner knowing and slow down and ground ourselves in meditation. So it's something that that's kind of the next thing I'm working on.
That's awesome. You know, I was thinking 20 minutes ago while you were speaking, people who have written a book or people who write or journal, they know their story. And it is a beautiful thing, because you sit and you talk with conviction. Mm-hmm. I know my story. I see it clearly. I know who I am. I see what I've done. Mm-hmm. I see that what I've done doesn't change who I am. Right. And there is this aura of grace and dignity that comes with that kind of self-knowing that you just can't fake it. Like, you absolutely can't fake it. And it brings up the phrase, I want what she has. Like, you know, it's just like when we see those women who are like, you can tell they've done the work, because it's you can't fake it. And then immediately it's an, I want what she has. How do I spend more time in her arena, right?
Like, well, let me step in and say I'm on year three, so this did not happen overnight. So
yeah,
I'm past year three. So I really want to, again, those baby steps and taking time. You know, it is about doing the inner work, and the inner work is never done. You know, but it's loving all parts of yourself. That's the other thing. I think we as a society get caught up in, and what I love is the internal family systems, is that, so here's what I do. When the people pleaser, the chronic achiever, the perfectionist shows up, which happens all the time for me, I view them as like a little army. Okay. So they all, you know, here's people pleaser all armed up in her armor. And then there's the chronic achiever. And then there's the, you know, the overfunctioner, the perfectionist. And I just kind of pat them on the head and say, thank you so much for your service, because you helped me survive through a lot of challenges in my life. And I appreciate your service, but now you may go on your merry way. And I choose differently. So it's not viewing myself as like this bad person. It actually made me win a lot of awards, you know, it made me very successful in my career. It helped me, you know, have a good work ethic, do certain things. But now I know that what I'm always trying to do is catch myself in this over functioning and saying, especially with a book launch, oh my gosh, this is what I'm struggling with the most, is to like stop and go, oh my God, Meg, you have done enough. It is okay. Stop. You're going back to your old way. The army is showing up and they're like, let's go into battle, you know, and you just have to like catch it. It's this catching of your old ways, your old patterns. And that takes time. So just, you know, be gentle with yourself on this journey. I know it looks like I have it all together. I don't, I'm still learning. I'm still growing. And that is the beauty. The beauty is in the mess, really. It's those hard moments where it is, instead of looking at triggers and challenges in life as like, oh my gosh, here's another setback, I look at it now as an invitation. Huh, wonder what this is here to teach me. It's that same curiosity that we had in our alcohol-free journey that we have to have in our inner work. When these things come up, there are spiritual lessons there to teach us something. And if we will just pause and not react like the army wants us to, you know, we can sit there and say, I wonder what this is here to teach me. Wonder how can I grow and expand? Because I know if I do, magic is going to show up.
Gorgeous. I think that that's a beautiful place to leave our listeners. I know I feel like I just got a little bit of like rays of sunshine pouring over me.
I love it. Yay.
Thank you so much for being here and sharing with us.
Well, let me just say on the final note that we all have a light within us. When you talk about sun rays, we all have this inner knowing, right? This light. And when we dust her off from all the conditioning from society and our life experiences, and we let her brightly shine, you felt my light. And then your light just started to shine brighter. And that we are all connected by this bright light. You can see this woman behind me with this bright light, right? I truly believe it's already within you. It's not something you have to fix or improve. You already have that light within you. You just got to dust her off.
Thank you, Meg. Yeah, Meg, the ultimate cheerleader. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Sober Reference. We hope you found this content valuable and are leaving feeling inspired to drink less, live more, and meet your potential. You can find more cost-free resources on our website, www.soberreference.com. We hope that you'll connect with us on social media, search Sober Reference now, and look for our logo. Great job taking in sober positive content today. Until next time, this is Sober Reference, and we are so glad that you're here.